Welcome to the Morning Glory Project, Stories of Determination. I'm your host, Betsy Graziani Fassbender. Like in nature, we see determined flowers and vines clinging to life and seeking light, so are Morning Glory people. And in this podcast, I'll interview writers, activists, artists, entrepreneurs, survivors and thrivers, and trailblazers of all kinds. These are folks that have been determined to get over, under, around, and through the obstacles that face them, or to seize the opportunities that come before them. I find these people inspiring and amazing. I know you will too. It's my pleasure today to bring to you not only a wonderful writer, but a dear and close friend. I unashamedly invite people that I love onto this podcast because some of them are just the most amazing people, and this is one of them. Amy Peel had zero ambitions for holding elected office of any kind. She'd volunteered over the years in ways big and small to support her community and her kids' schools, to pass bond measures, and to support local and national candidates when she could. But hold office? Nope, not for Amy. Happily retired from her 35-year career in the dynamic and fascinating world of organ transplantation, Amy believed her retirement years would be devoted to writing the next books in her murder mystery series, travel with her family, and contributing as she felt moved to causes she believes in. Then came the tap on the shoulder, and she learned of the underserved members in her community, the absence of vital issues in what would be her opponent's platform, and the network of support she could tap into in order to run for local office. Today, Amy sits as a recently elected city council member in her mid-sized suburban city in the San Francisco Bay Area. As she climbed the steep, sometimes bramble-filled learning curve as a first-time political candidate, she dedicated herself to running with integrity, authenticity, and a spirit of generosity and good humor, no matter what she'd encounter as opposition. And she did that. Amy is the author of Cut, a medical murder mystery, and with its sequel, Match, to launch in spring of 2021. So, Amy, I welcome you to the Morning Glory Project today, in the context also not only of your election and holding office for the new time, but in the context of what our whole nation and, in fact, the whole world are facing in the coronavirus world that we now live in. So I'm glad to know that you are safe and well, as are your loved ones, and I hope that our listeners are safe and well as well. Welcome. I'm glad to have you here.
Well, thank you, Betsy. It's an honor, and I've been listening to your podcasts, and each one brings a little inspiration, morsel, or morning glory to my life and gives me the courage to continue to show up and be my best self on most days. So I'm grateful for what your contribution's doing in a bigger way to, I'm sure, a lot of us out there.
Well, I wanted you to be here not just because I love you and you're my friend, but because you're the first person that I've been close to who wasn't a politician at all before, but became one. That word politician, it sounds like such an ugly word, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so tell me a little bit, tell my listeners a little bit about what prompted you to run for local city council. And by the way, my education has grown through you because, frankly, I'm going to confess, I've always been one of those people that tuned into the state level and national level politics, but I didn't really tune in that closely to my local politics. So I've learned to appreciate more about that now, that these are not small positions. They're very influential in the daily lives of our community. So can you tell me a little bit about how that invitation came to you and why did you heed the call?
Well, I was minding my own business, just for the record. I have to admit, though, that I was a bit, more than a bit outraged by the national political scene. And I kept hearing the message, act locally. And to that end, I would show up and we did some postcarding together and tried to participate with my own community in certain ways and that I thought would be supportive. And so that was how I was moving forward. And then our local city did their first district elections, which means they break up the town into smaller bite-sized pieces. I got approached by some people that I've known for almost 25 years who are also civic leaders. I don't call myself a politician. I call myself a civil servant. And they asked if I would consider running for office. I ran into them at a rally at our own city hall around the immigration issues that had disturbed me deeply. And for the record, you and I both went and were there together with other family members to oppose what was happening at the Mexican border, and ran into some local county and city politicians or civil servants. And then next thing I know, I get this email that says, "You are the one." And I promptly responded to this woman that I have a lot of respect for, that she might be taking too many drugs, because I was not the one. And so she was very patient. And then she said, "Well, just meet with me. Just meet with me and this other person." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I just, you know, I don't think you got the wrong person here." And then we proceeded. I said, "Well, sure, I'll sit down, because I have a lot of respect for her and our leadership here." So I did sit down with these two really amazing, bright women, and they proceeded to tell me why they think I would be a good addition to the city council should I decide to run. And I left that meeting, honored, but like, there's no way I would do this, because it's just too much. And we were going to travel, and I'm writing, and, you know, la-di-da, la-di-da, with what my current lifestyle was prior to this.
And then something switched over for you. If I recall, it was when you learned about the circumstances of certain people in the community.
Well, a couple things. None the least was that you, as a colleague and a friend and a confidant, were someone that I run ideas up and down the flagpole, and I just didn't know if I would have the bandwidth or the ability or anything to do this. And you helped me kind of process the questions that I had in my heart, in my soul, and that I could continue to be a good writer and do the things I love to do, with teaching some yoga and all my other activities. And then I found that one of the folks running wasn't quite up to speed on issues around immigration and climate change, which are really near and dear to my heart. And I got so many people that came out of the woodwork I had no knowledge of, a group called the Resistors, which is a group of women here locally that weren't happy with the last election, so decided that they would get together. This is a group of 30, 40-year-old women with children and careers and busy. And they have rolled their sleeves up and said, "We're going to act locally and support candidates that want to make the city we live in a better city for all, including young families." And they showed up and they were prepared and interviewed me quite intently. And really, that was the turning point for me, when they said, "We really want you to run. We think you would be great." Of course, they had checked me out one way, you know, up and down online and around town. And when I saw that kind of energy from these women who, you know, like you, we've been married and raising kids, and boy, I didn't have bandwidth back then to do what they're doing. I thought, if these people believe in me and other people are saying, you know, we can support you, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go for it. I had no idea what that meant when I did it, but
I'm guessing it was probably good that you didn't have any idea what that meant, because perhaps had you known all that you've faced in the last weeks and months, you might not have.
I'm going with a big no. You're right on that one. If I knew everything I was supposed to do and had to do, in the forms and the people and the da-da-da-da-da-da, I don't even know how people at a county, state, or federal, I mean, run for office. They have my full respect, because it is a lot of work.
And so for a local city council job in a town of what is our town? 50,000 people, something
50,
like
55,
that, right?
55,000.
Something like that. So this is not a major metropolis. It's a suburb of San Francisco. And I want to talk about the bad stuff for a minute, and then we'll talk about the good stuff. But the bad stuff, the shocking thing for me as a, you know, Betsy Q citizen here, watching you run, I had no idea that for a local, very part-time city council position, that it would cost so much to run. How much did your candidacy cost?
All told, the campaign cost about $27,000. My husband, Mark, and I had to take money, or chose to take money out of our retirements. So we are still about $10,000 in the hole.
And so you take the money out of your retirement and then you fundraise to pay yourself back.
That, plus we fundraise to generate the other $17,000, which I hate asking for money. And it's uncomfortable for me. And calling and sending envelopes and knocking on doors and making phone calls and meeting a million people I never met before and showing up prepared to do the best I can. And I think we had four candidate debates in our district. Now, our district was about 10,000 people. So only the people in our district of our town could vote.
Which is a subgroup from the town of 50,000.
Right. So there's five districts. So about 10,000, give or take a few. And so the amount of physical, mental learning curve was steep. It was like every day we'd get up. My husband was like the biggest, amazing cheerleader. Without him, I'm sure we would not have won, with his energy and support and love and caring and folks like you who just kept, you know, come on, let's get this done. Anyway, and the strangers who some have become friends who believed in me. And the thing with this whole election, Betsy, which I think I'm grateful for, is I didn't come to this with an axe to grind, and I didn't come to it with an agenda. I didn't make any promises at all, except that I would behave civilly and professionally should I get elected to the city council. And I found a lot of beautiful things and amazing things, but like you said, there was also some bumps in the road and things that you scratch your head and go, oh my.
What I was also surprised about is that, you know, we watch the mudslinging and the nastiness at the national level and how ugly it gets and those are giant positions of power and huge dollars and all of that at stake. So I was stunned to see that some of that very same stuff happened to you in while you were campaigning and even subsequently after winning.
Yeah.
I was shocked to learn that there would be propaganda and lies that were spread and those kinds of things. Can you say a bit about that and what your experience was of that?
Yeah, I was shocked too that people were making things up about me that were not true and then spreading them far and wide. One couple sent an email to 200 people that said things that weren't true. The good news about that is that in the same neighborhood that this couple lives in, a lot of other citizens responded and said, yeah, we were there. We didn't hear that. That's not what she said. And let's leave the mudslinging to the DC people. So I had these strong advocates who I'd been meeting and talking to. But yeah, it was pretty shocking. And then they're just, some people were angry. You know, I think stepping back a little bit, I was grateful because I have a spiritual practice, a meditation practice that was helpful for me to distance myself a little bit from that toxic waste that was being put into the environment. My poor husband, he was just fit to be tied.
Well, he wanted to go punch somebody.
Well, I mean, he's not a violent
man. Not that he really would do that. I don't mean to imply that literally. I'm just saying I understand the kind of urge he felt to protect you and your reputation and who you are.
But I do need to say that what it showed me is there's really strong passion on both sides of the election, and that it helped me make a little more peace with our country's leadership and the people who have chosen it. And that it is, you know, as passionate as I am and you are and your listeners are about whatever it is, as we've learned, there's as many, if not more, people sometimes as passionate about the complete opposite. And having seen it face first, right next to me on a debate panel, getting still emails from a couple folks who are not happy with the outcome and being really mean about that. To me in my current post, it's clear that their passion for the other candidate was strong and good for them. But it was a really, I guess, a little bit more of a deep breath into, okay, I guess I understand a little bit better why we have the leadership we do. It might not be my choice, but okay. Because we can act locally, but you're right. The local stuff got as toxic and ugly as some of the things that we see.
It's just a matter of scale, but the same kind of stuff happening. Well, and so you alluded to it a moment ago in terms of your spiritual practice, and I want to get into that in a moment. But also, you know, you had a lot of years of experience working in a very high pressure environment you described your name, your exact position in the organ transplant field.
I was the clinical director of organ transplantation at the University of California in San Francisco for 8 years. I'd been in transplant a total of 35. So my role was working with about 120 staff and then physicians and surgeons. And that culminated in about 600 solid organ transplants annually. And my job was really making sure the back end of the whole machine worked as efficiently and as flawlessly as possible, dealing with really amazing staff and caregivers to make sure they got what they needed to do their job the best that they could. So it was a pretty, and at the same time, having regulators come visit from the state and the federal government unannounced. And so being ready for all of those things, and at the end of the day, making sure our patients got an organ transplant,
the safety that they need. And
yeah, just all those spinning plates. So that was my kind of day-to-day job. And as you can imagine, in that kind of an incubator, there's no tolerance for anything less than perfection, because there can't be. So you had to leave your ego out on the street, and you had to be a team player, and you had to do everything you could to do the best job every day, day in, day out.
That's where I want to linger for just a minute, because I'm guessing that there are a lot of people out there, hopefully a few of them listening here, that don't think themselves qualified to be a civil servant, to run for local office of whatever kind. And yes, of course, there are financial barriers and time barriers, all of those things. But besides those, I'm guessing that a lot of people disqualified themselves saying, well, I don't have the experience. I'm not a politician. I'm not that. Kind of what you did at the beginning. But the reality is that your experience in navigating difficult circumstances, in negotiating in your workplace, in managing hot personalities and challenging moments and deficits and all of the kinds of things that happen in a high-pressure medical environment, those skills are the skills that seemed to set you up precisely for what you do now.
Well, that's so clear and honest and true, Betsy, because, you know, as life goes on, we keep looking back and thinking everything that I have done up until now, you're right, prepared me for this time to run, even though I didn't believe at the beginning I could do it and didn't know how to do it. And yeah, I'm a registered nurse. I don't even have a bachelor's degree, but I've been to lots of universities and conferences and courses and all of that would probably culminate for more than that. But at the end of the day, my experience working with people, my scarce resources, our scarce resources were organs for transplant. People died if they didn't get them. And I can appreciate scarce resources at our city level with finances and services, approach it pretty much a little more even-handedly. Hopefully no one will die if we can't really get to that park and fix XYZ. But I think that you're right. And I think we never know when we do things day to day, year to year, how that's all going to culminate. So when we show up and someone knocks on somebody's door and said, maybe you'd want to be on a commission or be on a committee locally, in our capacity as city council, the people who stepped up to show up to be on committees is awe-inspiring. These are hugely amazing, intelligent, credentialed, lettered people who want to participate in the pedestrian and bike commission or the, you know, all the different things. And so it's just awe-inspiring that even if someone didn't want a seat at the table on the city council, if they wanted to just look at their own town and say, well, maybe I'll try the planning commission or the design review commission, or maybe I want to be on streetscape. And, you know, see how I can make my own block or my own neighborhood look a little better. There's so many opportunities that I'm just feel like I'm on a treasure hunt in my own town.
And seeing people that have been neighbors, but discovering new things about them. You know, I guess I want to linger here a little longer because I think that for me, that the takeaway of your story is that we have that inner voice that disqualifies us. Oh, you're not enough. You don't know that. Who the hell are you? What? Blah, blah, blah. You know, we tend to kind of disqualify ourselves, or kind of in the hero's journey vernacular, we sort of don't want to heed the call, right? We have those hesitations. And yet I think that lots of us have more qualifications for more things than we think we do.
Well, I think you're right. But the thing is, if we surround ourselves with people, see, somebody like you or these other folks that approached me, they saw some things in me that I didn't see in myself. I mean, I had my career, I was successful, I was grateful, I was always in a team supportive way throughout my whole career as a nurse and in transplant. But people outside of me saw things, and I tended to go to that, these are the reasons I can't run, won't run, because I won't win and I can't do the job. Like my go-to sometimes, not always, thank God. But those were the things I was coming up with. And every time I came up with them, friends, close friends like you, or other people like my husband, or some of the civic leaders would say, no, you did this, you did that. And I'd go, yeah, I did. I didn't like, oh yeah, hey, I'm putting my arms up and, you know, good for me.
Yeah, we're not talking about false bravado here or people doing things that they're truly not qualified to do, but to say that there are transferable skills, that you had a lifetime of experiences and qualities, personal qualities, that were relevant to this task, even though you'd never imagined it.
Those are the words, transferable skills. And I believe now as I continue, and I'm just new to my post and probably 4 months now, old city council member, is that we all have transferable skills, and that the number of people who past mayors and city council people who have stepped up and partnered with me and just held my hand and looked at me and I asked questions and I'm not afraid to ask any questions and they're giving me good information because they've been in the post some 10, some 12 years. That they really want me to succeed because we have a common passion, which is for our city to be the best city we can make it. And that empowers me so that turned the volume down on the national irritations that are a reality. And I got to turn the volume up locally to try to infuse my energy, my time, my focus on my town. And I love my town. I've lived here 30 years, so I have some skin in the game on that.
Well, the other thing that really strikes me too, Amy, in this process, as I observed it from the outside, was that you're a tender and loving and sensitive person, but you're also a person who more often than not is able to say, that's not my problem. I'm not going to put energy into that. You're able to kind of detach and say, you know, I'm going to let them run that little story in their heads over there, but I got things to do over here. In a way of kind of not taking things personally, though they got really personal in their aggression, but you didn't take it in as real, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, it's true. I know you know the book, The Four Agreements, and one of those is, you know, don't take anything personally. And that's easier said than done, as you can imagine.
Well, that's a practice and not a profession, certainly. At least it is for me. I practice it all the time, but I got to say, I got a ways to go.
Oh, every day. And then I read every day the seven spiritual laws of success. And each day it seems like it's a simple law, like today's the law of detachment. It means do everything you can do, but detach from the outcome. And even till the end of the campaign and votes were coming in, I just said, okay, I need to practice this law because we've all done everything we can to make it happen. And now I need to detach from the outcome, because if it's really meant to be, I don't have to look in the rearview mirror and say, oh, I shoulda, coulda, woulda. I think we did everything we coulda, shoulda, woulda, and be okay. I made peace with the fact if I won, I won. And if I didn't win, I won. And that way it was grounding for me, because I really did truly believe that I could detach from the outcome.
And that seems to be not only just about winning the campaign and the position itself, but ongoingly as you fight little battles to get things to happen the way that you believe that they ought to.
And that I do have thick skin because I've worked in academia medicine for 35 years. And I've seen people who've lost a loved one, and I've been the one there asking if they would consider donating their loved one's organs. And when you're in that kind of space with somebody, that's the most, to me, sacred space, and they decide to donate organs. My early job was to orchestrate all the events that culminated in organ transplant. And that's kind of my benchmark of reality.
Well, that puts a different scale on everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when you've been in those moments where you've asked somebody whose young son just died on a motorcycle accident to donate his heart, somebody making up crap about you for a political campaign must have a lot less meaning.
It did. I was like, what? When I heard it. But then when I go back to my upbringing in the transplant world as a young nurse and coordinator and then director, I think, see, these people are waiting for an organ transplant. They are waiting sometimes for another breath or maybe drinking a whole glass of water or three and while they're waiting for a kidney or, you know, trying to breathe through basically a straw when they're waiting for a lung. So these are people who are on wait lists around the world who need organs for transplant. And when you're in that world day in, day out, and trying to make the best decisions and support the team, this political scene that I then decided to jump in the deep end, it's hard. I have a lot to learn. But to me, it wasn't nearly as intense and life-threatening as my prior world. So like we said earlier, everything I had done up until now had prepared me to be sitting in the seat to serve the community. And I'm so grateful for that. Plus, working with surgeons and doctors, you know, they don't mince words. So if you don't have thick skin, honey, you're going to be using a lot of Kleenex or you need to find a different job.
You had a few egos to maneuver around now and then, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of this quote from Brené Brown, who says, "Do not think that you can be brave with your life and your work and never disappoint anyone. It just doesn't work like that." So it seems to me that when I watch you, you are so brave. You've been brave with your work in organ transplant. You've been brave with your writing as an author, stepping into a learning curve you knew nothing about there, and now brave in this particular position and mothering your children and all those things. But it seems that you've accepted that some people aren't going to love everything you do.
It's true. And I make peace with that. I used to be a terrible people pleaser. I just wanted to make everybody happy and overcommitted and did silly things that weren't really smart over the years. But I was pretty much I would say I had my PhD in people pleasing. And with lots of, I'd go with therapy, journaling, workshops, introspection, all those things over time. I finally figured out that no matter what, I wasn't going to make everybody happy. And you're never going to make everybody happy. I get it. It's one of those lessons still. Doesn't mean that I don't want to, but there's just times, and I'm already learning in my seat as a council member that like there's some things I can listen. I can get information. And at the end of the day, I can't stop the construction crew from working on a house that's under construction here, even though we are in this situation where it's a, you know, shelter and home and all the essential versus non-essential things going on. So yeah, I'm learning the lesson over and over again.
Seems like the important ones are like that. They're perennial. They keep popping up with new flowers for us to pick, don't they?
Isn't that the truth?
Well, so let me, I want to ask you two more quick things before we close. And the first one is a practical thing. I know that in addition to your work now on the council and your work as an author, that your heart is still in the organ transplant world. And what can you say to folks about becoming donors?
Thank you. I always love that opening. Just make a decision one way or another if you want to be an organ and tissue donor or not. If you do, tell your loved ones, and you can sign up on a national registry, or you can sign up at your driver's license bureau, or you can sign up at many, many places. But just make your best decision And then when, God forbid, anything happens, they will ask your, it is a law that they have to ask your loved ones. So just make your decision best you can, and people can honor it. And I'd say that's really the most important thing about practicality.
So is there a national, is there a website or anything that people can go to get the information about how to be a donor?
Yeah, well, actually, if you go to my website, amyspeel.com, there is a counter that is part of my website because I write about transplant in my murder mysteries. And I have the number of people waiting, number of transplants, and you can go to the link and sign up. It's very simple. And or you can go to UNOS.org, United Network for Organ Sharing.org, and go there. So there's many places. If you just say, I want to be an organ donor, your screen will have a lovely, productive response.
Wonderful. And so now to slightly happier, more fun news. You are the author of Cut, A Medical Murder Mystery, and you call it a murder mystery with a mission. Is that how you phrase it?
That's correct. A mystery with a mission and a side of humor is how it's been referenced.
Nice. So it's called Cut, and it does take place in the organ transplant field, which is a little world that most of us know, us the fortunate among us know nothing about, and that some people know a lot about. But it's an intriguing world for a murder mystery. And your second one, Match, will be coming out in the spring of 2021.
Right. It's about kidney transplants and paired exchange. And there is a dead politician, but it's not my fault. It's just the character's fault. I didn't do anything.
Well, it's a dead politician, but you do reuse his organs, right?
I can't really answer that. They'd have to read the book.
Oh, okay. Well, we do want to keep some mystery there. Amy Peel, I adore you personally. And now thank you so much for being part of the Morning Glory Project. I wish you every kind of blessing.
Betsy, thank you so much for including me in this esteemed group of amazing interviews, and keep spreading these morsels. We need them now more than ever. So thank you.
Before I start with the extra blooms today about my conversation with Amy Peel, I want to give a little bonus bloom. I have a lovely podcast to recommend, and it is Stories That Empower, hosted by Sean Farjadi. Sean is a kind and gentle soul, and he just welcomes the loveliest conversations. I've been honored enough to be on his program, and doubly honored when I look at the other folks that he's had there. So if you're looking for a little bit of peaceful respite and a little bit of inspiration, check out Stories That Empower, hosted by Sean Farjadi. In reflecting on my conversation with Amy Peel, I have to tell the truth here, and that is that because I know her so well and she's such a dear friend, my impressions are informed by the things that I know outside of the interview. And I know Amy to be a person who is really great at assembling the resources she needs. She pulls in experts and knowledge holders and people with experience to fill in the gaps for what she doesn't know. She's great at building a pit crew, and I've seen her do that in a number of different kinds of settings. And so here she was, called to do something she had no ambition for and thought she had no skill for, really. But she did what she always does. She was humble, and she knew what she didn't know, and she knew that she didn't know a lot. So she assembled a group of people around her to help fill in what she didn't know. It makes me think of how many times so many of us likely disqualify ourselves from something. Oh, I couldn't ever do that. I don't know how to do that. I've never done that. I've never thought of doing that. But if we come in it with humility and with the desire to do it well, and we pull in the resources that we can to support us, we might all just really be surprised at what we're capable of doing. We might just be stunned at the capabilities that we have that we didn't even know we had, and the transferable skills and knowledge and experience that we have from other arenas into the new one. You might be called right now to things that you didn't think that you would ever do or want to do. In fact, during this pandemic and this time of social isolation, a lot of us are being called to do things that we didn't think we could do. We're called upon to use resources and even technologies that we've never used before. We're called upon to make do with the materials in our homes to do the things that we want to do. You can do it. You've done it a million times before. You've adapted. You've used resources. You've developed skills and built upon them. You can do this. Thanks for listening to the Morning Glory Project. I wish you quiet blessings and simple comforts where you are. And I hope that wherever you are, you'll find yourself in blooms.